Welcome. This is recording, so unlike when I'm at home at the church where I pastor, I have to be careful about what I say. This could be an interesting session. My name is Mark Glenn. I am serving Acts 29 as the assessment coordinator. I've been doing that role for a number of years. I've been involved with Acts 29 since it started within Australia. I was at the very first boot camp in Brisbane many, many years ago. So what I want to do today, just to describe a little bit of the rhythm of what we're going to do. It probably won't be like your normal kind of breakout session. We just want to have a bit of a conversation with you because we're only starting in this. We're going to give a little bit of story, a little bit of theology of where we're at. We don't want you to have to drink from a fire hose and just bash away. That's Chandler and Guy and Adam's responsibility. But also we want to have a little bit of dialogue, have a chat with you guys about where we believe this is heading. The Rural Collective, what we're looking at is developing resources and things that are translatable and transferable. So we're starting, Matthew Spandler Davidson, the guys started in 20 schemes for church and hard places in a small context, and they built what they're doing out from that. We're actually starting much bigger and then trying to refine back into context. So a lot of the stuff we're still working out. We're processing. We've had two meetings over a number of days, a number of Zoom calls, Skype calls, and we would say with the guys, we got a leadership team of seven from South America to Africa, to Malawi, that is, to the UK, to parts of the US, and to here in Australia. I'm fortunate enough to serve on that team. And we sort of have a couple of little sayings. We're writing them down, and we're going to eventually print T-shirts, we think. One of the guys in the US said, we're just going to roughneck this sucker. To the response, the guy in the UK said, well, we're going to give it a jolly good show. So we're going to continue with that kind of theme and go with that. So I thought what might help, David's going to come up and speak to us in a moment. I'm just going to give you a little bit of my story, how I got involved in rural church planning and with the collective. So as I said, been involved with Acts 29 from the very start. My wife and I went to the first boot camp. We were part of a little community Baptist church in our town. We're in the Southern Highlands of New South Wales, so south of Sydney, home of Don Bradman, if you know who that is. And I grew up there. I'm sixth generation local. I'm an architect by trade. My father was a long-haul truck driver, so that was my realm. Bedtime stories with a CB, so we're not going to tell any of those. Got saved at 20 because I thought what every non-Christian guy wants, you always want what you can't have, so I chased a pastor's daughter. God thought that was amusing and saved me through that process, then married her. And through the community Baptist church where we were, we just felt a need to serve and be involved. It slowly shrank for no major reason. It was about 140 adults when we joined it. We were there for a couple of years and it was 18 adults the Sunday that we closed. The guys that were leading there were godly men. They were godly men. There was no big feature that demised. We look back with hindsight and we can see reasons why. But as it was dying, God stepped up my role in it. I promise it didn't correlate for why it was dying. But he was teaching me so many things, and we thought we needed tools to be able to help that church. So I was told to, I'm very black and white, don't like playing word games like probably many of us are in this room. And I was told to podcast a guy by the name of Mark Driscoll. My first question were, what is a podcast and who Mark Driscoll was? And I listened to three sermons sitting at home, self-employed. And those three sermons were Men of Masculinity, Men as Husbands, and Men as Fathers. And it smashed my world. I realized that my responsibility wasn't just to stand out, watch the kids while my wife had a cup of tea and that was it, but I had an active responsibility in the growth of my wife, my kids, and my church and my community to know Christ. So I continued on that theme, heard about Acts 29, heard about a lot of things, and the thing that fascinated me about Acts 29 was looking at planting churches without the history, without the tradition, but what does the Bible truly say constitutes a church and how do you reproduce that? And the missional pattern in the Bible was to plant churches to reach people. It wasn't just a holy huddle or a gathering of people, but to actually bring people into that family. So we heard about a boot camp, wanted to go to the States to go to one because I thought that sounded cool. Heard about one in Brisbane. We drove up the 12 hours, my wife and I, one day, sat through 2 days. We were wondering what was going to happen as we went to A29, you know, what's God doing here? We drove back the following day going, oh my goodness, what do we do now? We stayed on at that church, and during that process, we met David and Wilma Fandy. who you would have met. They were from the fields in Carlsbad in California, so Southern California. We met them, Dave out of the blue. We call it a Fandyism. He does these kinds of things. He rings me on the Sunday and says, we're going to be in Sydney tomorrow with five of the kids they had. Do you want to come spend the day with us? And so I went up and explained our story. And over the next 2 years, David and I spent many times Skyping, emailing, and he was encouraging me to honour the elders where I was. How can I help? Discussing that. He never pushed me to leave and go and be rash or anything like that. But we got to a point where we thought we needed more tooling. So we spoke to David after another boot camp. I was at the airport and I said, mate, what does it look like for me to get more training in this? He said, right, I've spoke to our elders. We want to have you and the family over for 3 months. We want to put you through an internship. So we packed up the family, shorter version of the story, moved to California for 3 months with all our kids, left behind business, work, mortgage, all the rest of it. We went. People knew before we went that we were coming home to plant a church. We didn't. We got month one in. We were going, okay, we might be going home to start something new. By the end of two, we were going, yeah, we're going home to plant. The whole time their eldership was going, when you go home and plant. They knew it long before we did. One of the elders who's here today with us, our elders are here, he and his wife knew that we were coming home to plant before and they were going to be a part of it. So we went home, honoured those elders, told them what we're doing, and started a community group. At that point, I think we were church one or two in Australia at that point. We hosted a gathering of Acts 29. But we were pretty much the only rural church. Barrel, somewhat rural. You know, we are small. We are somewhat isolated. But the guys from Sydney like coming down and buying little hobby farms and pretending they're in the country from the sovereign nation of Sydney. As we move through Acts 29, I love that it's always been growing. It's about the core things. It's never been dictating about the way we do church. We are the fields because we planted out of the fields. I think the field suits our context much better than beach in California, but that's okay. And then along came this the initiatives that the board spoke about, and the rural was just something that was close to my heart. Traveling much of the country with Dad and being involved. You know, you grow up in sport, you travel to everywhere to play a game. It's nothing to drive 5 hours to go and play one weekend. And we got to see that, and we just saw, it frustrated me reading Keller, not all of it, but focusing in on the city, focusing on the shaping of the culture in the city, focusing on church planning needs to happen in these urban centres. And I think it's a both end. It's a both end, and culture is actually shaped in the country. It's just that everyone that's going to shape it then moves to the city to go to uni or anything else like that. The Rural Collective came up, and I was just excited to hear about it and then privileged enough to be invited on to help shape that. As I said, we've spoken twice about it. So we are really open to what this looks like in our context. Like I said, we're developing up strategies and systems and things in place for the wider continent of the whole earth, but we want to be able to contextualize it to our context in Australia, and that varies from, you know, parts of Queensland to country Victoria to WA, especially to New South Wales. So we want to be able to develop those systems up, and I just wanted to share with that how I got to that point. People always ask me, you come to a Bible college, come to here, and they always ask, where did you study? Part of me sort of goes, you sort of shrink away from the question because you go, it's not as good as anything else. I've actually had no formal theological training. That is not a stopper for us, although it's a great thing to have and I'd love to pursue that. It was always, why should I be taken out of the relationships that has taken me potentially generations to build to then be taken and put into another context to be pulled out? So we're trying to get the training aspect of what we're going to do up, whereas Matthew Stanley Davis was talking about what they do with apprenticeships to get the guys up to assessment, we want to be able to provide that training, coaching, especially support and connection for our rural church planters and revitalization of our existing churches and how that happens. That's it for me. If you have any questions for me, I'm going to be around. We're going to do a bit of Q&A in the end. I'm going to invite David up. He is the director for us for Rural Collective. So please welcome him up. And I don't even know what you're going to say.
One of the great joys of being a part of the Rural Collective is meeting Mark. This is just a sweet privilege. Yeah, it is. It is. Well, I don't hang out with too many cool people, so. Yeah, except Tom Brady. Anybody know that name? Oh, okay. No, I don't know Tom, but I do root for him. Hey, listen, thanks for being here, and I just look forward to some Q&A. And just a question, a curiosity. How many of you presently are in a rural setting? Wow, that's great. Thanks for being here. And then I know that majority of people have family members and friends, especially family, who live in rural places. And one of the things we'll talk about, some methods, and we're trying to catalog different methods and models that might work in planting rural churches. But one of the clear workings of the Spirit is calling people back to their home village or their home people. That's evident. And don't have to be six generations, but the idea that God is honored and he is calling some to move back to their homes and reach their people. So that's a cool model. As I mentioned, if you were in the big gathering there, my dad left the business world at 40, went to college because God laid upon him to be a pastor. His first wife had died. He had married the woman who'd be my mom. He had a 13-year-old, 11-year-old. Dad married a year in. They both felt, mom and dad both felt called to ministry, and so they went off to college. And that's where I was born, outstate New York. And my dad moved to the small state of New Hampshire, which is a very rural state. In 1965, I was 2 years old, and pastored faithfully there. Gave up, you know, the all the comforts of middle management and a large propane company to pursue the call of God in rural New England, rural New Hampshire. So I've grown up in that context. I pastored my first 10 years as I followed my dad. He retired after I came. I was finishing my undergraduate degree, and looking to go on to seminary because I didn't want to be like Mark. No, I wanted to be formally trained. Sorry, no, but I was too dumb. I was a C student. You know, when Chandler last night, if you heard him talk about how I'm normal, very normal C student. So my dad retired. The little church there in this little village voted me in. It was a Baptist church. They can vote in anybody. They did. I was 23, and just got engaged to Sharon. And the first 10 years pastored, and the last 3 years just saw God do incredible things when anyway. Spent the next 5 years in Pennsylvania on staff at a mega church, and my lofty goal is to move south, which in New England, in the North America means warmer climates and have a swimming pool. That was my lofty kingdom goal. God hit me on the side of the head, come back to New Hampshire, plant a church. That was in 2002 we made the decision, made the move. And there was this new organization that just started called Acts 29. And the denomination I was a part of, which I'm loyal to, but it's kind of like visiting your uncle in the nursing home who has Alzheimer's. You know you ought to pay respects, but like, is there any life there? Yes. So I was looking to be a part of something. It's just it's an analogy. Don't be insulted. So I was looking to be part of something that was missional and that was gently reformed. That's my term. I like to use the term gently reformed because, yeah. And so was voted in easily back in the day because, if you would stand in a room, raise your hand and say, I'm complementary and I'm reformed, and I love Jesus, and you didn't drool too much when you did that, you were brought in. That was assessment. Now we've actually improved that process. In fact, I've got this story. So nobody ever talked to us because we were in rural New Hampshire. We weren't young and hipster, which everybody else was. But we would go to a lot of things, and every year there was this pastor's retreat, and we would go. And for 4 years in a row, it was in Vail, Colorado, which is beautiful. And I have somewhat of a gift of hospitality. I like to make people feel comfortable. So I couldn't serve. This is like the first time I've ever spoken up front, except in church. I mean, I am a pastor, legit. I'm a legit. I do pastor. And so I was just welcoming new guys. And 1 year, might have been the same year, but one year there's this tall, lanky guy and his wife, Lauren, and just welcome to the network. Hey, how are you? Welcome. God's going to use you. And he sits down, and later he gets introduced as Matt Chandler, and I'm going, I didn't know the Village Church. It was one of those funny. And then another time, this older British guy that I welcomed, and not knowing who, and now he's my boss. And that's just a side story. So coming back to New Hampshire, being a part of the network, having watched it, and thank God for it's a miracle that the network survived 5 or 6 years ago, and in the last couple years. But God has blessed us with humble leaders who are not, they are held accountable. Actually, the guy downstairs doing the other breakout, is it Josh? Is it
Josh?
His actual title is lead pastor. There are three lead pastors at the Village Church, and so there's this plurality of elders, which is truly worked out so that personality cannot be overlooked and ruin ministry, which we've seen happening in the evangelical world. Okay, enough. Let's talk about where we are now. So we've been plodding along. We finally, after 16 years, have seen a successful church plant. And we've been supporting church plants, but as far as trying to raise up and get people to come to rural New Hampshire to plant churches is like, it takes an act of God, which we believe. We believe in his sovereignty. But when the Rural Collective was discussed at the Global Gathering in 2017, they asked people, if you're interested about rural ministry, just stay in contact with us. And I just kept hounding. And then in September, there were seven of us that gathered over in Sheffield, England to discuss what the rural, rural collaborative would look like. And being the oldest guy in the room and kind of looking for something to do. So part of it was, my strategy is, I'm staying in New Hampshire. I'll be buried next to my dad, Lord willing, if I can afford the plot. But we wanted to bring in a younger guy, but we didn't have the mechanism to do that. And kind of said, I just feel like I should be a part of this rural collaborative. And here we are. I'm a co-director with Robert Manda. He's a brilliant, godly guy, younger guy in his mid-30s in Malawi, Africa. And he's doing some amazing things there, which we'll talk a little bit about. One of the things we want to make sure, give me a timing thing here, because I have no concept of time. Yeah, just so we want some time for question and answer. One of the things we want to make sure is we understanding that there's a theological, missiological rationale for rural planting. And I'm excited this fall, there'll be two books that come out, one by one of the guys on our own team, John Hindley, who's in the UK. Just a brilliant guy, and you guys have great accents, but he has even a better accent. And then another guy, and we don't know the titles of these books either, but another guy is part of the Gospel Coalition of New England, good friend of mine, Stephen Whitmer, Cambridge educated, pastoring a rural church in Massachusetts, and he's got a book coming out, both laying the groundwork for why God wants in his plan to see rural churches planted. So laying a theological foundation for that. But I want to throw out to you three passages that for me just stir me. One is in Psalm 115. Let me read to you Psalm 115, verses 12 and 13. The Lord has remembered us. He will bless us. He will bless the house of Israel. He will bless the house of Aaron. He will bless those who fear the Lord, both the small and the great. You hear that? God blesses big places. I'm so glad Matt Chandler and the Village Church are part of the network. I'm so glad God works in cities. I'm so glad he works in highly populated places. But I'm so glad he works in children. He works in small places. And so that verse just struck me even before we were in Sheffield in September, that God is blessing both the small and the great. And ironically, I think there's probably a good argument to be made that the small are put in order here before the great. Now flip with me over to Revelation. Revelation chapter 11. That is, verse 18. Yeah, I'll get there. I do not own an iPad, which, you know, so I can't thumb through it and find it quickly. It's like old school here. You kind of have to start in this one. We give in verse 17, saying, "We give thanks to you, O Lord God Almighty, who is and was, for you have taken your great power and begun to reign." And his reign is going to include judgment, but also reward. So you kind of verse 18, you get this picture of the nations rage, but your wrath came, and the time for the dead to be judged. Now this line is significant, and for rewarding your servants, the prophets and saints, those who fear your name, both small and great. There's an intimidation factor at times that in small places where it's kind of like we're like in our setting would be junior varsity or amateur, or you know we're minor leagues. I don't know what terms in
it'll work.
Okay. In other words, we're not like as important to what God is doing, but these verses remind us that if God has called us to small places, He will reward us first before the great guys. I'm going to hold Jesus to that order. One more verse. Revelation 19, verse 5. So we get a vision of the throne of God, and I love to imagine how the new heaven and new earth is just going to have incredible sports without injury, incredible food without calorie, incredible wine without drunkenness. Just all sorts of, eye has not seen, nor ear heard, nor has entered into the mind of man what God has prepared for his children. Worship will spring out of all the activities we're involved in. And it says here, an invitation. And from the throne came a voice saying, "Praise our God, all you servants, you who fear him, small and great." There's a theme in the Bible that we often overlook, that somehow numbers matter to God. They do. He loves all the numbers. He made them all. He loves big numbers and he loves little numbers. He loves the one sheep and the 99 sheep. And so part of our theological framework is to say, springing from the truth that God says that the small and great will bless him and he will bless them, that the small and great will be rewarded for what God has called them to, that the small and great will be invited to all the glory of God. Springing from that, we who are called to small places can, in a godly and humble way, wear the labels, we're gospel nobodies in this realm. Nobody will ever write books about us. And if we write a book, no one will buy them. We're just doing the will of God. The Lord Jesus taught us to pray, "Your kingdom come, your will be done." And his will is for you to serve in a rural place, New Zealand or Australia. It's glorious. It's glorious. And good will come from that, and people will be added to the kingdom. So with that as our framework, now we're asking ourselves these questions. How can we, as seven guys spread around the globe, and when we do a Zoom meeting, it is the most bizarre thing in the world, because Africa, if they can get dialed in, seriously. And then, you know, Latin America, a couple of the guys in the States, and Australia, just the time zone tying in is just a crazy thing. And the settings are different. But we're trying to surface, because we're rural guys, we're used to not having resources and things like, you know, things sort of like hitting, being popular and then gone. And frankly, the finances for the rural collective are only guaranteed for 2 years. So I'm a practical rural guy going, okay, 2 years, we might be over as far as having resources to show up in the Gold Coast and to spend professional hours thinking through strategies. So if we are to be done in now 20 months, what can we leave in our stead that would continually promote rural church planting? Because at the end of the day, that's our goal, that churches are planting rural churches. And so part of the last 4 months is just surfacing things that are working or could work, that are locally sourced. So I am not the guy coming from the United States here to tell you how rural planting should happen in Australia. I've got 24 hours experience in Australia. And one of my four sons, his hero, is Steve Irwin. That's all I got. So one of our goals is locally sourced strategies and cohorts that for the long term will plant rural churches. And so we want to provide some models. For instance, here's a model. Last week I was having breakfast with an attorney, a solicitor, I don't know what you call him around here, a lawyer, a friend of mine. He'd been an elder in a rural church plant for 20 years, kind of got burnt out. He's hiding in a mega church right now, but he knows God has more for him to do. He's my age, he's in his 50s. And we were having breakfast, and I just asked him, I said, Mike, what are you going to do with your life? And he had not heard about the Rural Collective because we hadn't had breakfast for several months. I said, Mike, we have like 60 towns in our state, rural New Hampshire, that have no gospel witness. And I said, maybe Jesus wants you to go and find one of these towns and open a small little attorney's office, because one of the ways the church needs to serve rural communities is how can we be a blessing to them? And Mike says, yeah, I've been thinking about that. I've actually been thinking about that. And so we talked about the potential of him in the next couple of years by God's Spirit. We are Spirit-led. The church has been Spirit-led from the beginning, and some of us Baptists ruled him out for a while, but he's back. we want the Spirit. I'm ordained Baptist, so I can pick on him. We want the Spirit to guide Mike, the attorney, where he can go and open a practice. And as a second career, bivocational, highly gifted guy, go to a small town and plant a church. That's a model. There's a book. I've been trying to read some books on rural planting. There's Donnie Griggs' Small Town Jesus. There's another guy. It's called God's Country, Brad Roth. He's a Mennonite, so he's a little different on certain things, but loves Jesus and good book. But this book, Intrepid, 829 friendly guy, pastor, actually he's a PhD. He teaches at Multnomah Bible Seminary up in Portland, Oregon. Sean Benesh, B-E-N-E-S-H, Navigating the Intersection of Church Planting and Social Entrepreneurship. And he's building this network called Intrepid about people who with high capacity, passion to see the church planted in, he's both urban and rural, but rural places that need economic development but need a gospel church. And there are some guys who can go there. We're talking about finances. I mean, Jesus always wants to be desperate for him and not finances. So coming up with creative ways to fund church planting in rural places. As a model, there are, I just keep bumping into these, Adam and Church Liberty Church here, they've been investing in Malawi, where Robert Manda is, for years. That model of a substantive church of 150 people, the church in Pittsburgh that I was mentioning that helped starting to invest in Dominican Republic. We had our first Acts 29 conference and assessment there. And just that is a model where there's a, in Oklahoma City, there's a large Acts 29 church called Frontline Church. I say large, it's a mega church of, I don't know, probably 2,000 or 3,000 people. But they have two paid residencies for 2 years. And one of those guys is going to not rural but urban India, but another one of those rural residents is returning to his home towns in rural Iowa. And there's another model of a substantive church that can invest in residencies. So those are some models we're trying to surface and champion. One of our strategies in the next 2 years is we're trying to do what we call small rural collective summits. The idea of in a region that a guy can drive to in a day and spend a day at a conference that is led by local rural pastors, the worship team. I love Jeremiah. This is awesome. Heaven's going to have like some of this in one of the ends of the, you know, you're jumping around and I don't dare move lest I break something. But most rural churches are fortunate to get one guy who can carry a tune and strum a guitar. And so our rural summits will be the worship, be God-centered, simple worship with a guy strumming the guitar, because we're trying to say you don't need, I mean, listen, the sound system in some of the churches around are more than twice what our annual budget is at our church, you know, just the sound system. That worship team down there is awesome. That's bigger than some church plants that in rural places, right? The worship. So we're trying to say, wait a minute, success looks like a church that is Jesus-centered, community-loving, Bible-reliant, led by godly elders, that's on mission to love their community. And you just don't need a lot other than Jesus in that, right? Sounds like Acts to me. And so these models that we're trying to promote, now there are models that are going to be for like Africa, Asia, and Latin America that are very different, and those are, there are some of those models that are, Robert Mandel, my co-director buddy, he's got a church of like 500, right, adults. Their average monthly collection is about $200 U.S. They're just poor. They live on what they grow. But you know what they've done? They developed this pastoral training residency. It's 2 years. 1 year is on-site. In the morning, they get all the theological pastoral training. In the afternoon, they get agricultural training. The second year, they're supported to go back to their village and teach both gospel-centered Jesus theology, because Robert says this, in Africa, churches will be planted. The question is, what kind of churches? So the second part of the year of their residency is doing that, supporting him, and then with the training, hopefully increase the agricultural output so an economic sustainability of that village increases. That's one model of what we see happening overseas. Trying to figure out what that all looks like. And again, we're just 4 months into that. Again, our goal is at the end of 2 years, whether or not there's a rural collective after that or not, we've left in our wake good models, good hubs. We kind of use the beehive picture. One of my sons, again, four sons, he's taken up beekeeping. Of course, they all die in the winter. I don't know why he keeps doing that. Now, we haven't figured out how to, the survival rate up where we are. We left New Hampshire door to door. It was a 35-hour trip. We got here yesterday into the hotel at about 5, or 4:30 or something like that. But we left New Hampshire, and it was minus 12 degrees Celsius, and we just got 6 inches of snow yesterday. That's where we live. We still have Tom Brady, so we're okay. If you don't know who Tom Brady is, God bless you. He's a nobody. He needs Jesus is who he is. Happens to play a poorly named sport. It's called football, but it's not. You know what? You know, it's Americanized something or other. We're trying to use the word picture of a beehive, because here's what we believe, is that I can't go to, we're doing a couple of these rural collective summits. We've got some beta testing them, one in West Virginia, one in rural Oregon, lining one up in Ireland, Northern Ireland, and one in rural Georgia. But I'm going to those and not speaking, other than doing the emceeing, sort of like the welcoming and kind of like, because we want local guys leading this, building a local network like the beehive that then spreads the goodness of the gospel in their region. And I don't know rural Georgia, or rural Oregon. I've been to these places, but I just don't know them. So why would I come in? And we can talk about theology. That's one thing. But that's sort of one of our strategies in the next 2 years is ideally in 2020 we will have 20 or 30 of these. Ideally, a couple here in Australia, maybe one in New Zealand, and the whole idea. And we're going to be talking in this June with the Churches in Hard Places, who are more focused on the urban poor, but how we do these maybe conferences together, figuring that out. But that's all I got. Questions, thoughts, comments? Yes, sir. So Mark's going to stand up here both to answer and translate things, words I don't understand. Yeah, like I found out thongs are not what I thought they were. Yeah, he asked me if I brought my thongs to Australia. I said, that's none of your business.
Just talking about something being rude.
Yeah.
One thing is just thinking of how urban churches could perhaps partner or participate in the sort of vision of reaching rural areas and supporting the church. A bunch of the, I don't know if this is the same in the States, but a bunch of the kinds of professions that a lot of Christians go into, thinking like education, thinking health, nursing, but others as well do have a lot of those industries have this system where after you finish your training, your study, there's often expected a rural placement or something like that. You know, I mean, everybody tries to not, well, not everybody, but a lot of people try to not, to try to stay in urban areas where it's whatever, it's cool and there's nice coffee shops and things like that. But just thinking that urban churches with the people who are training in those industries could be working to promote a missional, gospel-centered approach, and thinking to that to be when you finish your training, go for it to go to wherever, to go out west. I'm in Brisbane, so thinking rural Queensland or remote Queensland, to be promoting the idea of can go there as a Christian person to be a mother of gospel witness, but perhaps to support a church plant to go and be a part of.
Yeah, so one of the things that we're looking at, so just for the record, I'm trained architect for the last 20 years. I've run my own practice and planted the church and worked for Acts 29. So I'm like tri-vocational, sometimes three or four. But one of the things we're looking at in terms of internships, because we say the margins and the experience are more in the country, you can't just go in to be an intern and not be involved in every aspect of ministry. One of the things we're looking at is how does internship look with partnering with a urban or city church to say, well, send us your interns, because they'll probably get more experience in ministry within 3 weeks in a country church than what they'll get in 2 years in the urban church, where they're just focusing on youth ministry between the ages of 14, 5 months and 15, that they get that aspect. But how that partnership looks and how the housing, because a lot of us know we sit in our churches, we don't have the funds to put an intern on. We don't have the facilities to house them unless they want to stay with Ma and Pa. We don't really have the funds, the infrastructure or the structure to how to run someone through an internship to give them that experience. And let's face it, most of our churches, if we're in any kind of context, we don't have a university. So everyone, we've got a missing generation between 18 and say 24 or maybe 34, where they finally have kids and they move back to where they were. So plugging that generation back into where we are, that's one of the things we're looking at, is that internship, professionals, and making sure that we have the training, the resources and the support for guys that are tradesmen, the guys that work a job with their hands, landscapers, teachers, whatever it is, not leaving this purely, I don't read in the Bible anywhere that we have a certain qualification or a dip ed or any kind of thing to be able to be in ministry or to be an elder or even someone in the church who contributes to the ministry and planning of churches. I mean, it's not just the elder's job, is it? We're all called to ministry. So that's one of the things that we've been looking at. Part of the rural summits, the structure of it was what we're looking at, is being able to hand people. Most of us, if we were to put on a conference, it would scare the pants off us. We don't have an administrative assistant. We don't have anyone else because they're all working. So we want to be able to give a structure, two main talks. These are the talks that we really want to hit, the theology of planning, and give an outline for what we are, and then a list of subjects that might be contextual, mental health, ministry and music, youth ministry, what that looks like, and providing an outline and a structure for that talk where someone can go, okay, I can actually prep a talk on this to my context using this outline, course outline, and be able to do that. And then part of that then is not only selecting those things, but ticking those boxes, but then giving opportunities in the afternoons for even workshops. So being able to sit in, the amount of times even after last year, you come in, people find out you're a real church planner, they come and go, I want to tell you about our church and what's going on. Can you help us? Or what's your advice? Or can we just, so we want to provide space where there's workshops where we sit around a table and there's no assessment. It's just like, okay, talk to us. Let's think this through. And if that rural summit is four people in a room, then we want to actually spend time praying for those things, praying for the people in those churches. So out of that, then we want the cohorts. So we want groups of like-minded pastors in an area to be able to get together for accountability, just support. There's a type of support that you don't get from everyone else. You need someone that's like-minded, that understands the situation. It's one of the appeals of Acts 29 is we've all gone through the same assessment. So we come in, and because the assessment actually probes, our laundry's been aired to one another. So even if someone doesn't know that, we all know that people have looked into our lives. So you can come in, you don't have to be anyone else that you don't need to be. You know, you come to these things, you go, okay, I've got to, someone asked me how I'm doing, I've got to protect that. So we want to develop that and see that in our rural context, especially in Australia. I mean, we fight to be middle class. We really do. We don't want to be anything higher. We just don't want to fail. We just want to be in the middle, but we don't want anyone to know that we're weak in these things, but there needs to be a vulnerability within us to, and people to be able to go to in that. So that's one of the things we're looking at. Workshops in mental health, identifying our country areas are just devastated by that aspect. You know, you get those phone calls, those things, the families that you know all the time. So we want to provide training and aspects. And then the big part is about church planning. We want to see revitalization. So we're trying to look into what that looks like, not take away 50 or 100 years of people that have been prayerfully and lovingly serving the Lord in a church and go, well, we're just going to start this new thing in the coffee shop. We want to go, okay, how do we strengthen that and revitalize that and replant that and support the people that are already there? So that's some of the things that we're looking at and doing those things.
Yeah. You bring up a couple things. One is theologically, every Christian is a missionary, absolutely, right? God has called certain missionaries to be cross-cultural, and those need to be honored and supported and prayed for. It needs to happen. And by the way, that's another model where Jay Bauman, who's been with the network almost, I think, as long as I have, went to Brazil early on, and he's been down there and built this, massive, like there's like 35 or 40 Acts 29 churches just in Brazil because this Western guy with full support went down there. That's a great model. But everybody's called to be a missionary. One of the things we're calling people to do is don't look at church as a part of the thing you do on Sunday and maybe go to a Bible study and you got your career. No, your career is your mission. And if you are called to a rural place to do your internship for nursing, maybe Jesus wants you to go there and stay there. We tell people in New Hampshire, young people, I try not to guilt them into it, but unless Jesus is calling you to a different geographic place, stay here. We need you to stay here. Take up blue collar jobs if that's what God. Four sons and a daughter, and one of our sons climbs cell towers and fixes cell towers, and it's actually quite a lucrative job. Who would have thought, right? Nobody talks about that. But he's active in the church and supportive of the church, and he's staying in New Hampshire, thank God. Somebody's got to take care of me when I start to lose it. So you raise, and then, I mean, what you've just done is surfaced a contextual way Australians can help church planting is by talking to young professionals in their internships about going intentionally to rural places and plugging in and serving in gospel-centered churches. I think that's another thing that struck me too is I think it's really a God-calling thing where suburban churches can, you know, I think, is multi-site a thing in Australia with churches? Is it a bit? Well, I think like suburban churches could actually do a multi-site in a small town 30 miles out that might have 15 people in it. But you don't need the lights and the band, and you need God-centered teaching. You need worship. You need how do we serve this town? And if and just, yeah, so there's lots of ways. I mean, I love this thought of the internship principle. Anyway, we can ramble on all day. Yes, sir. Then we'll get you.
I suppose we're based in a town of about 800 people. The nearest town over 1,000 people is just over half an hour away.
We love you guys.
And they're about 1,026.
And God loves you. You're doing what God's calling you to do. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Is there anyone making resources at the moment? I mean, this is you guys, I suppose, but on that sort of a context, on the dynamic of church planting in that context? Because even like, I suppose, mission in Adelaide's our nearest city, and there's a million people in Adelaide, and you can try an outreach strategy, and if it doesn't work, you try a different one to other people, right? And in Middleton, you've got 800 people, and you try an outreach strategy, and if it doesn't work, you may have just put the entire town on side.
Yeah.
Is there anyone producing resources on that?
Well, I think, so we hope to have like a laundry list of resources, and let me just, smalltownsummits.com is the Gospel Coalition sort of template that I've come to this with, and they have a list of, they have several pages of resources. Let me tell you a story, and I saw two other hands here. So our little church, we about 3/4 of our people are in small rural towns, and we meet in this city of about 40,000. Well, one of our elders lives out in this town called Henniker. It's the only, they on their signs are the only Henniker on earth, because they're the only one named that on earth. It's a town of 4,800, 1,700 in a private college there. No gospel witness. There's a Catholic church, and there's an old church that is, you'll understand this, they have a lesbian pastor. They don't talk about Jesus the way we talk about Jesus. But rather than going in there and trying to start a service, saying we're here, we do our missional communities, our small groups around a meal. We said, let's do our missional community in a kind of a public place, pay them $50 a week for renting this old building in the center of town. And so this elder's been leading that group, meeting around a meal, studying the scriptures, and had some folks from this other church, because they meet on, our missional community meets on Sunday nights. They still go to this little church, but they've been longing for Jesus to come back to Henniker. So we started asking, how can we serve this town? Well, one of the women in this group is a school teacher in that town. And ironically, she's been there 35 years. My dad led her to Christ like 35 years ago. It's a pretty cool story. She says, you know, our public school teachers, they get $100 a year for their supplies, but they burn that through that. And then they have to pay out of their own pocket to get resources. And one of the greatest commodities in the public school are dry erasers, you know, whiteboards. So we said, hey, our missional community, there's 15 people in it. Why don't we just start providing dry erasers to the teachers? Now, that kind of outreach, I don't care. I mean, what happened in 2 months, we started this in October. We've done some other things, too. But the town elected officials decided to waive our $50 a week rental fee because they heard how much we love their town. Now, so I think when we think about outreach in a small town, you have to think about what is their need and how we're meeting it, not like what program we can put on. You know, what need can we meet and meet that need? And in that, when we have opportunity to talk about Jesus, and again, we have a presence there, we're gathering. And so I think, yeah, we raised a great question. We're still learning about how to put all the resources out there.
I would say, just very quickly, you got to look at what people value the most. And in our rural communities, people value the most is time. So be deliberate and be consistent. Like, just keep going. Like, show them love consistently. So it's easy in an outreach in a bigger area where you can just go, I love you here, but I want to tell you about Jesus. It doesn't work. Come back next week with a different thing. But because they'll know you, they'll see your life. You know, I think it's all been touched on. You can't just pursue godliness from the front. You know, I used the story last year because the one day that you flip someone off will be the next person you see in the next town, which has happened to me because they drove too slow.
Flip anybody. Yeah, no, anymore.
They were going, you know, 60 in an 80 zone. But it's that intentionality of what people value the most. They value time, they value effort, they value you investing yourself. And sometimes, and we got to remember that God's plans aren't rubbish because we use some evangelistic strategy that doesn't work. Yeah. He doesn't go, oh no, that person I was going to save, but you just stuffed that up. Yeah. He doesn't do that. So we just got to be trusting in him. And that's a big prayer point and to keep moving forward. But that'd be my thing. Resources, yeah, great, because they strengthen you and they train you for what you're going to do. But dependence on God and the Holy Spirit is the biggest thing, and just be consistent. Yeah. Just keep going. There's another question. I don't know. I got Florian. Do I preach that stuff on a Sunday? There you go. Yeah. Well, yeah, it was funny when Chandler talked about success and metrics, and it was last Sunday, I was only talking about this, and we always say that personal success isn't measured in anything else but faithful obedience to God in all things.
Say that again.
Success is measured in faithful obedience to God in all things. Yep, should be. Bumper sticker. I'm like, take it. You're the boss. So yes, we do. I think what's happened with me in my preaching from when I've got to that point where as God's growing me, my dependence on him, he's opened my eyes to that very fact, because I'm long-term invested where I am. I didn't choose to plant a church for a financial or ministry gain, or, you know, because I idolized ministry. It was a conviction and a call that I just couldn't steer away from. Catherine's often asked, why did you plant a church? She said, because we knew that if we didn't do it, we would have been swallowed by a big fish, spat up, and done it anyway. So that's pretty much what it works out to be.
Listen to your wife.
Yeah. That help? Yeah, out the back, you go. It does. Yeah. It's really hard to, like, you stand up and you preach in a church. And so when I was working multiple jobs, you know, you'd be prayerfully poring over the scriptures. I love when I read through and listened to Keller's lectures on preaching to the heart. Has anyone ever listened to those? When you listen to that, there's a little bit in it that he, on his planning of his sermon series, that really struck me. And it was how he sets out his sermons. You know, he spends 2 weeks and pours over the passages and breaks it all up, and then he spends 5 hours here. And then towards the end of the week, he spends an hour or two polishing up. Now, that's Tim Keller. But he says, if someone wants prayer or someone wants to meet with me, he'll do that. And it sort of got me thinking, we got to put people over polish. So often in our preaching, we're going, okay, we're about to walk in. I've got to go read my notes so I don't have to stare at them so long, or whatever else it is. But there's someone that's coming in tears, or there's a family member that's just smashed. So you just got to put people over polish. But the temptation is, people can go anywhere to hear great preach. They can listen to Matt Chandler every week. I think that what we try and do is say that being a part of a church is not just the preaching, that is the community that speaks into your life. So although my preaching might stuck, you will never get that community, what you're called into as a Christian. There's no such thing as autonomous Christianity. You're called to be a part of a community and a family. It is a battle. I think we all face it. I mean, come on. How many of us can preach like those guys down there? They're very, very gifted. But Chandler once said that if God wanted Tim Keller to plant a church in your town, he would have put Tim Keller in the church to plant. You know, that's the way it works. And he didn't. So we just got to stick to that calling and what he's given us.
And let me repent a little bit of that motion there, because God uses all things, and I just want to say that. But the whole idea that you can go to church sitting on your living room and watch something and then give with your cell phone and not sacrifice and not hug on people and be family and not gather around Christ with others and and remember the Lord's death until he comes. The idea that you can do that in your isolated, I mean, it's already, we all know that the screen time is disintegrating relationships. And so I wouldn't say that it is, there isn't a place for it. Certainly shut-ins and invalids and things like that. But the idea that to use the Soma model from, that we are family, that we are learners, that we are servants, and that we are missionaries. The idea that you can do that with online church is just foolish. Yeah. Sorry, I'm just got an attitude
and,
on that one.
And also, the guy who preaches on a Sunday lives in that community, knows those people. There's an empathy that you pray with all week that breaks your heart, that when you get up to expound God's word, you can't get from anyone, no matter how gifted the communicator they are, because it's not their people, it's not their family. Like when you're standing up and you preach and it brings you to tears because you know someone there is going through that thing and you've already walked through it prayerfully in the week, you just can't get that online. And I think the more we stir people, even in our, when we're in a church, like I was in a church for a while, I just thought all I did was turn up. All I did was turn up, that was my role, and walk out, until we become active listeners ourselves and call our people to be active listeners, then they're just going to turn to that. So I think it's a real challenge and it's a real thing. But at the same time, we want to be thankful that there is good content there at the same time. Yeah, if we're that remote. Yep. Yeah. And that's one thing Sam Swadling at Gospel Church in Newcastle was doing for a while. They were recording their sermons and there was 10 people in the room and pumping it out west to churches to give the lay elders a break from having to prep a sermon every week and concentrate on the people, just to give them that relief. So it's something that we look at and how we potentially do it depending on the remoteness, but ultimately we want to be able to provide the resources to train those people that are there to be able to communicate that.
Let's honor time. I think we're supposed to.
Yeah.
We're here to be around, and if you want to be connected with us, go on Rural Collective, Acts 29, somewhere there, and it's a place to connect, right?
Yep, there is.
That would be the easiest way for us to connect. And we're around, and he lives here, so.
Not here. It's the best thing about the Gold Coast, I get to go home. Just for you guys to know, any questions you've got, please hit us up. Downstairs on the Acts 29 table, there is a business card of Acts 29, and it does have my email address on it with Acts 29 for my assessment coordinator role, but it's the same email address you'll get me on. Please hit me up there. Otherwise, yeah, acts29.com/rural, and there'll be a connect, and we just did our first newsletter, which was an experience for us all. But to stay connected in that, if you've got any questions, ask us. The only things I need to tell you guys is... 1:30 is the Logos, I think. Is that what it works? There's two seminar things that are happening this afternoon. One's the Logos training and one's a Church in Hard Places. And that's at 2:30. So I think they're both downstairs, 1:30 and 2:30. Otherwise, back here tonight. I'm not sure on any other announcements. But
can I pray?
Yeah, I was going to say, you're the visitor. You want to pray for us?
Yeah.
And we'll leave for that. Thanks.
Jesus, New Zealand and Australia are yours. You've created them, and Lord, your gospel has changed people here throughout the centuries, and Lord, you have more work to be done. My prayer, Lord, is upon the churches represented here and your daughters and sons in this room. Lord, the zeal for the gospel and the love of the neighbor and the confidence of the Spirit work would drive us deeper into rural places, in small communities and forgotten and isolated places, that we would love on people and talk about Jesus and gather around what you have done for us in a way that says that you are all things, that Jesus, all things were made by you and for you, that you are before all things, and that you hold us all together and you're drawing men and women to yourself. Lord, I pray for converts, I pray for workers, I pray for sacrifice, I pray for vision. I pray, Lord, that you would fill this country with the knowledge of the glory of God like the waters cover the sea. We pray this for your glory's sake and the joy of your people. Amen.